My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
We are live. After AEW All In 2025, you may notice that I'm not Joe Lanza. And that's because I'm not. I'm Fred, co-host of The Good, the Bad, and the Hungy here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I am waiting, possibly, on my co-host Tyler to join us. I guess we'll see on that stretch. But hopefully he'll be able to make it. What a show. What a way to spend a day starting watching wrestling at 2 p.m. local and finishing at 9. I am not touching the television again. It has been negotiated for at least a day, but that's a small price to pay after watching that show. I thought they nailed everything on there and really pulled it off in the end. So, great go-home angle, or I guess end-of-show, show-closing angle would be the proper terminology. Yeah, I mean, it was time to pull the trigger on the title change. I feel like Moxley had his run. It had gotten good after starting off pretty rough to the point that I gave the multi-man end of last year main event a dud because I hated it that much. But, yeah, I thought that this match was excellent. It was brutal, as it should be. It was hellacious. And it was an utter success. You had all the run-ins. This was basically a WWE-style main event with all the run-ins. Big surprises all over the place. You had the return of Bryan Danielson. You had the return of Darby Allin. You had all the Death Riders taken out one by one to even the odds for the babyface. Before and after that, you had some absolutely brutal spots. I thought this match was excellent. I will not be surprised if it finishes in the top 10 of the Voices of Wrestling Match of the Year poll. But just absolutely a success in every way that I can think of. So, great performances by both men. And, yeah, I mean, it was everything you could hope for in this spot. Moxley stepped up, best Moxley match in God knows how long. Best Moxley performance. I realized that his bit was kind of different, you know, less than what he was going for. Or, you know, what I'm trying to say is, like, he was trying to do less of a I'm having great matches gimmick and more of a I'm the dastardly heel you want to see eventually get beat gimmick. So that all makes sense. But, you know, Hangman Page had a great outing. Moxley had a great outing. Just an absolutely fantastic main event. So on top of that, I think there's a lot of good stuff up and down the card. Some great stuff. I think all of the three advertised main events delivered fantastic performances. There were a couple undercard matches that were very strong. There were some that I think kind of disappointed. And I'll be talking about that. Maybe we will see Tyler make an appearance, but you know, we'll go ahead and get into it. So I guess, yeah, we'll talk about the main event some more. So essentially Paige started with House of Fire, and then you got Moxley, and this crowd was molten for this match. The pop at the end of the match when Paige got the win was one of the louder I've heard in quite a while. The surprise return of Bryan Danielson under the Blue Panther mask, because of course, absolutely nothing but respect for doing that. And you know, there's only one wrestler that has ever cut a promo from the top of Mount Everest, and that's Darby Allin. And what a gimmick, what a thing to see happen. Absolutely insane. But I think we're going to segue right into Darby against Mox, which makes perfect sense, you know, considering how this whole angle started. Darby will be able to get his revenge away from the world title, because frankly, Paige and Swerve too, at a minimum, got them so hot that you could not just be like, you're going to have to wait your turn. Like, you had to pull a trigger here. And I think Paige was at least as good of an answer as Swerve, if not better. I don't really have a strong take on that. And yeah, I mean, you had the Bucks coming out, and one weird thing that I think will be interesting to watch going forward is Ospreay getting taken out so early without Swerve coming out to save him. So I think that is going to leave open the window of what I had predicted before the show, that Swerve and Will Ospreay would be having a feud. That just made a lot of sense to me. And at the time, and I could still see it happening. You could still have Swerve turn heel, I guess, but the fact that Ospreay just basically got killed is a little weird now with that in hindsight. I guess we'll see how that goes. And I believe Tyler has joined us. Tyler.
Hello, Fred. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, buddy. What a show.
What a show. I've just been gushing about the main event for about 10 minutes now. So if you'd like to join in, go right at.
This was a 5-star match, and I don't think there's really much argument against it. I can understand not liking the run-ins, but I do think in some situations, run-ins are good. I think it's a big part of the story, and I think this run-ins in this sense was a really big part of the story. And I really liked how they did the run-ins. There was no music. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a great touch. It's something that has been a problem with American television wrestling for quite some time. And the fact that they were able to do it without the run-ins, I thought was tremendous. I thought it was great from start to finish. And I really liked how, even though it was a Texas Deathmatch, it felt like a main event epic. It was almost like they got both of them in one shot. I thought it was masterful throughout. They were very particular about when they used interference and when they brought people in. You got the return of Bryan Danielson. You got the return of Darby Allin. Swerve helped him, but he also left enough shades of gray where he stood there and was like, do I want to give it to him or do I want to sock him with it? So I thought that was a nice element.
Drop and sock it like you're from 1967. Sorry to tear you away from your episode of Martin Rowan laughing.
Laughing. Well, that was very good. I
have to get my shit in.
I got real annoyed when they did the stretcher job for Samoa Joe early on, where they didn't give him a neck brace. And Ospreay took an easier one by like appearance, and he got a neck brace immediately. Somebody got yelled at for that. Good. I thought that two things that really stood out to me, other than the kind of like the run-ins and how they structured everything. I thought the camera shot of the fork was one of the more brilliant production things we've seen from this company. Let the fork itself and the brutal nature of the spot really shine, and then dragging through the glass. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Now, that was brutal.
I don't watch a lot of deathmatch. That was phenomenal, Fred. Absolutely phenomenal.
My God. There's just some, and then of course we got the nail bed, which they unfortunately revealed a little early, but hey, what can you do? Can only so many parts of the ring to put it under, I guess. But yeah, just I will say that I was more afraid that Moxley was going to get like outright slammed on it and just like get embedded or have some god awful spot, you know. We were like, I hope that doesn't hit a spinal cord.
But I knew straight up that Hangman, the second they brought it out and Hangman was over it, I'm like, oh my god, he's gonna stomp him. How are they gonna get out of this? How are they gonna do this? In the hand was a really good touch by Hangman. It also played into it, and I thought Taz was great on commentary where he made a comment right away. He's like, oh, got the hand under. Like,
Taz is so good at that kind of stuff. Like, he really, I think that Taz, you know, kind of got a bad rep at some points. I mean, it's been years now, but, you know, towards the tail end of SmackDown and towards a lot of his TNA run. But I think one of the best things that Taz does now is there's little, like, I'm going to call it like a shoot stuff that he kind of does. And I really appreciate that. And that was a good example of that.
Yeah. This main event was tremendous from start to finish. I want to give my props to Moxley because that the finish, the where he was hanging from the chain, that was a shoot, man. You could see his face turning colors.
He's a madman. Absolutely.
He let that thing legit choke him. Mm-hmm. And to really drive home the finish, major kudos to him. I thought he was brilliant throughout the entire match. I thought this Death Rider stuff really took a turn for the positive. And we've talked about it back in like January, February. It started to really come together.
Yes.
I thought Danielson coming out with the Blue Panther mask was great because you knew it was him, but you weren't 100% sure. And then.
Yeah. It's such a Bryan Danielson thing to do, and I love it. Just great.
It was just such an easy 5-star match. I thought I might have multiple on the show. I didn't.
I did not either.
It just, like, this was a 3-year story for Hangman Page. Theoretically, he's going to have his big title run, but I'm curious if maybe MJF spoils that pretty quickly, and then he starts another story arc to come and get it back. But I feel like him and Swerve have enough distance between them now to where like, it's like, hey, I can just deal with being around you, but I still don't like you.
Yeah. And I unfortunately did not get to watch the go home collision before this, where they had the promo with Paige and Swerve. So, I wasn't able to see that before this show, but I just thought that, you know, that felt like a good blow off to their stuff. I don't think you're around for this yet, but I was kind of talking about how the Ospreay spot where he got taken out at the end, Swerve didn't come out to help him. No one did. And I thought that was kind of interesting. And I wonder if that's going to set up a turn possibly by Swerve or even by Ospreay, frankly. Between those two and set off the feud that I think we both kind of thought would happen when we assumed that they would lose the match to the Bucks once they set up that gimmick.
Yeah. That was really interesting.
I did not expect that finish.
Do you just want to go right into the tag match then?
Yeah, sure. Why not? I mean, we could just bounce around. I thought that was, because really Swerve and Will are, you know, two of the top stars in the company. So it's going to be interesting to talk about where they're going. We will hopefully never hear the phrase EVP, or at least not for a long time. I got tired, pretty damn tired of the whole, you know, oh, we have a creative control gimmick and all that stuff. And the Bucks don't need that to be heels. They could just be complete, you know, asshole jerks that are also geeks that come out on a boat.
Oh, my gosh. The entrances I thought were so good. One of the big things that I thought with the entrances is Will Ospreay, the pyro. Like, Tony Khan spends more money on Will Ospreay pyro than I make in a year. But I thought it was great. The entrance for the Bucks was just so good because they're just such hateable douchebags. And Nick Jackson getting the chin part of his beard shaved. I think, what is that, a Fu Manchu?
I think so, yeah. I think that's what he had.
God, there's
great
they're
so, asshole face hair, facial hair.
They're so great when they look disgusting. It's wonderful. I thought they had some really good storytelling elements throughout the course of the match. I thought just doing their own version, like a new version of a super kick party to Ospreay, I thought was awesome. And just kicking the ever living shit out of him.
Yeah.
And then Swerve coming in and taking bullets for him, but then like hulking up, I thought was a really, really cool spot. And the finish, I love the house call hidden blade combo. I think we kind of saw that coming, but I think this is the first time they really debuted it. I went 4¾, I think, on this. I thought this was awesome. I loved it. Fred, this was just the Bucks being the best tag team of all time with two great wrestlers.
I will say that I feel silly saying this because I went 4¼ on it, but I was slightly disappointed in that match just because I thought the floor coming in. I mean, you see these four names on paper, and I thought that I'd be giving it like 4¾ at worst, you know, by the end of the night. But I just thought it was a little too disjointed is not the word I want to use, but it just didn't hit like I was hoping it would. And I think this was kind of an issue with the entire undercard throughout the night in this setting, because I think they had the crowd mic'd really well to catch them having big pops. Like that pop at the end of the main event is mm-hmm. like just really was really, really loud. The bell pop for Omega Okada was big, and other moves, like, you know, just when there'd be a high spot and you hear the crowd go, oh, you know, like that would come across clear. But I think the some other stuff that I think would be picked up better in an arena just didn't seem to transmit here. Now, maybe the crowd was not as hot as I was hoping they would be. Maybe they just didn't have it mic'd right. Maybe it just doesn't carry properly, and, you know, or like, not properly, but like you would expect in a baseball stadium versus a basketball arena or a smaller building like they've been running. And so maybe that's just a small price to pay. But I do think some of the matches lower on the card lost the intensity, the feeling of intensity that you get sometimes in other buildings. Yeah. I do think that was a downside here. But, you know, we get two, you know, this is two heel gimmicks actually to end tonight, that I think kind of definitely had moments where they were way overdone or overexposed or just grating. And that would be, you know, the Death Riders, Jon Moxley, and, the Young Bucks / EVP stuff. I think I think it'd be fair to call those heel runs uneven at points, but I think both of them by the end were working really well. And I think both are just going to persist in their, you know, their best forms. You know, the Death Riders are still going to be like this gang of jerks that you want to see lose. And the Young Bucks are just going to keep calling themselves, you know, the most important part of the founding of the company until they turn face, and, you know, whenever that'll be. But I don't expect that anytime soon. I think they can just carry on as heels for a while here. It'll just be interesting to see who their dance partner is once they move on to their next feud, which I presume they'll be doing. I don't imagine we'll keep seeing, you know, Ospreay and Swerve as a team against them, but maybe I'll be wrong there.
I actually thought we were going to get a little bit of a break from the Bucks after the match until they came in for the main event.
Yeah, that surprised me. I did not expect them to run in. I fully expect the Death Riders and Gabe Kidd to run in, but I did not expect to see the Bucks out there. But, you know, it made sense given their history and everything with Paige. And also, which one of the Bucks, I can't remember which one right now, but one of them did the Buckshot Lariat in their match, which I thought was also kind of interesting. So maybe that's, you know, foretelling more involvement with Paige going forward. I don't know. But yeah, like I thought that was a great match, but it just was not as great as I had hoped on paper. And that's not a complaint, you know, just how it goes sometimes. And it's hard to be bad about, you know, a match that you're like, yeah, it was great. It's 4.25. So, let's get back to the top of the card, though. I do want to talk about, do you want to talk about Omega Okada next, or you want to talk about Storm and Monet?
No, let's talk about Omega Okada.
Okay, go ahead.
Man, this match was really important to me. I think I've told you before, I don't know if I've said it on air, but Omega Okada is the reason, like, in a roundabout way, why I'm a sports writer and kind of ended up landing it like a dream job, because I found out that two guys I'd heard of Omega, I'd never heard of Okada, but two guys I'd never seen wrestle before got a 6-star match. And I'm like, how does that make any sense? I don't understand. And I was back home visiting, helping my best friend get ready for his wedding. And lo and behold, I found it. I'm like, oh my God, this is like the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. So that kind of just snowballed. I had my appendectomy that almost killed me. Then I went to the G1 in Dallas, started writing for Voice of Wrestling, turned that into sports as well. And now here I am. But I was so excited for this match, and I was so intrigued of how they were going to do it, because Okada's 37, Omega's 41. Omega's already talking about the fact that he's almost done. And I thought that they had a really good match, but it just never hit any of the notes that the other matches did. I thought it, like, if you would have shown me this match without having seen the other four, I would have loved it. It was great. They really worked the midsection well. I thought they got me a couple times with false finishes. And then just the landslide, Rainmaker 1-2-3, classic. Like, Okada's like, hey, I turned the tables, I'm getting a quick win. I knew that there was going to be interference, and I even told myself, like, it'll be fine if there's interference, no big deal. Then I hated it, because this is Omega Okada. I hate that there's interference. And it just bugged me. I only went 4.5, and I was just so disappointed. Marzi, you're fine. Come here, honey. Yeah, it just never hit any of those highs that we really wanted it to.
I don't think it compares to the original four matches at all. I mean, those are just on a different level, for the best wrestling matches that have ever occurred. But I still thought this was a really, really great match. I thought they worked it very differently. It was a much slower style. But I thought that it was a very tense match. I thought it was going to, it was, did a great job of, setting up or getting you invested in who would win and building that really well. I know that purists aren't going to like the Don Callis interference, that kind of stuff, but frankly, I thought it worked. This is just, it's a different style of wrestling, obviously compared to New Japan, and this is a part of it. I can't personally be like, this sucked because Don Callis got some stomps in. Frankly, Don Callis stomping on Bryce Remsburg was awesome. And I just greatly enjoyed that. I mean, and Romero and Beretta were only briefly involved, so I can't get too mad about that either. This was not a 5-star match. If I did the whole plus minus thing, I'd go 4.5 plus, but I don't like that system really. So I went like, I thought about it, I was like, yeah, I'm closer to 4.75 than not, so I'll go with that. But I do think they did a great job just building that match up the entire time. I saw a couple people say that they thought the finish was too abrupt. I can't really argue against that too much. Like, I get it.
I liked it, though. I thought it was great that it was abrupt, because even like the first Omega Okada match, he caught him with the tombstone, and then Rainmaker 1-2-3, even though it was a closing stretch, it was abrupt. So, like, to me, that wasn't a big deal. I thought it actually fit with the nature of their previous matches. Like, that's okay to me.
Yeah, and I think it sets, it probably sets up another one. So, in my mind, like,
does it?
I would think well, down the road, not anytime soon, but in a few months, you could, you know, do this again.
That Omega was very clear. He's like, I want one more time, one more match.
Yeah, but he, you know, he'll be like, oh, Callis got involved and Romero and, you know, Trent got involved a little bit. I just wanted Callis 1-on-1 and all this other bullshit happened. So I have to get an opportunity at actually getting what I want. I don't think they're going to like run it back next month or anything, but I think you could set it up and justify it pretty easily if you wanted to. I wouldn't exactly be shocked if they didn't, you know, it's not impossible by any stretch, but I could see them taking the, you know, I think the door is open. I definitely could see Omega being like, I just wanted to do it one more time, but you know I can beat him. I got, you know, I had to deal with getting injured beforehand, all this other crap. Don Callis, you know, I want revenge. So, but they could also split him off in a different direction. I think that there is enough of an opening there for Omega to go whatever. I think Okada is better as a champion than not in AEW. So, although not that we've really seen much of him as not a champion, but still the point remains. So I think that it's good that he took the belt. I'm curious to see what they're going to do as far as the rules. You know, are they going to keep the continental rules where no interference, no seconds or anything that they didn't really follow that much here?
I thought that part was interesting. This also wasn't... you're also establishing a new title, so I do think that they already told us what they're going to do with it.
Is this an actual new title, though? Because remember what they did with the Eddie Kingston Triple Crown. You know, they announced him as the Triple Crown champion, but really it was just he was holding three belts at once.
Well, Okada only left with the one belt.
Good point.
So, and Tony said that even though he's kind of went against the whole unified thing with what he said about the title, he said they can carry multiple belts if they want. They don't have to.
Okay.
So I found that part interesting. We got a couple comments that I think are really interesting here. Drew 101 said in a weird way that he thinks that the fact that Omega Okada didn't hit as high as the others kind of worked in his favor. But this part, Fred, it was about as good a match that they could have in AEW right now. I think there aren't limitations in a pay-per-view setting of what these guys can do. I don't think there's a difference between a pay-per-view setting in the United States with what AEW does and a big show in Japan. To me, there's no difference between this show and Wrestle Kingdom, this show and Dominion. You are that high on the card. You are expected to have a great match. You have the freedoms to be able to put together that great match and make it as epic as you want based on the time that you are given. So I guess I would disagree if that's the direction that Drew is going with it. But if you're going with it that Omega Okada just can't do the things that they could 7 years ago, then I would agree. I think they're probably not hitting those same highs, but I did think that there was something like a level better that they could go to. And I think to me, that's what was the most disappointing. There is another level for them. There is somewhere they can go. And if this really is the end, for somebody where this series has meant so much to them, I'm kind of disappointed that this is the end. But I still think that they went out on a high note. This isn't Hiroshi Tanahashi can barely move anymore with his knees. This is two guys that can still wrestle at a very high level. I mean, Kenny Omega had arguably a match of the year contender on January 4th against Gabe Kidd, January 5th, one of the two. And Okada can still go at a high level. He's really picking his spots.
Mike Bailey match.
Yeah, and he was great in that match. I thought he was great against Kota Ibushi, and he was great here. I thought he looked like $1 million. I think, as weird as it sounds, as much as the interference bugged me, I did think it was very well done. I thought the chemistry of everything, the layout of everything was very good. And Don Callis just continues to be arguably the most cohesive part of this company. Everything he does makes sense. Everything he does is well laid out. Everything he does is planned. And it's just structured really, really well.
Best manager in wrestling since he came to AEW, more or less.
Is he better than Heenan?
No, no, you can't say that. Absolutely not.
Can we have a conversation that he's on a level similar to Heenan? Like, this is the kind of manager that he is, right?
Yeah, it's very Heenan-like. Let's not kid ourselves. But, I mean, Heenan was on a different level. Like, let's just...
And I want to be fair. Just because I'm saying these things, I actually don't think he's better than Heenan. But don't think we've seen a manager on this kind of level since Heenan.
I mean, you know, Cornette was great in his day, as much as I do not care for him. He was extremely good with Midnight Express.
I think it's also different, though, because he was mainly a tag team manager, which nothing against that. But I do think with what Callis does with his singles guys and his tag guys and just everybody and how he keeps everything cohesive, he still has the quote unquote scar on his forehead. Like he's Harry Potter or something. It just awesome stuff.
I will say that I also prefer Heyman at points, not current Heyman, but I think in the aughts and in the teens, there are points where he was better than what Callis is doing. But I mean, I think Callis is extremely, extremely good. So don't take that as a knock on him. Let's get to Monet and Storm, because I thought this was a really interesting match. You could argue it's the best non-death match / hardcore match, whatever term you prefer, in AEW history for the women's division. There probably are a couple I prefer to it, but it's very much up there. And I thought this was a great culmination of the feud. Toni Storm won with a nasty looking second rope 0-1. Absolutely, like, it just looked brutal.
Did you call it 0-1?
I did, probably. Yeah, yeah. Storm 0, sorry. Hit her with the Shinya Hashimoto.
Listen, I love me some Kaiji Tomato, but come on, Fred.
I mean, yeah, this was a great match. I think, you know, I watched some of the people in the Slack, you know, like, initially they weren't into it. And I think there's still some residual resentment towards Toni Storm, just like there is to some extent with, like, the Death Riders and some of these other gimmicks that really struggled about a year ago. But I really think Toni Storm has figured out the tone of her character. We've talked about that a lot on GBH, and she's been nailing it for months now. And I think she is a tremendous, just great, great, great in-ring performer. And Mercedes Moné similarly struggled a little bit when she first came in AEW, had some consistency issues. But again, over the past 6 to 8 months or whatever it is, has been a fantastic in-ring performer. And these two got together and they had, I think, exactly the match that you should reasonably have expected them to have, which is just a great match.
It was a very weird match. And this was an epic. And it felt like two people just going to war. And everything was so calculated and so well thought out. A couple of the transition spots got a little sloppy. That's par for the course when Mercedes is wrestling, but Toni was just equally as sloppy. But I mean, they were trying some like really interesting, like lucha style transitions that just didn't land. It is what it is, but they were trying some stuff. Clearly this match meant a lot to both of them. I adored this match. I thought like about halfway through the match, it was really cool that Mercedes was going for a bunch of different roll-ups and that you thought she was going to go into a backslide as the next one and then just turns it into the moneymaker. I thought that was an awesome, awesome series of events because she was trying to trick Storm into being able to get the finish and it almost worked. I thought the sexual nature of this feud I've been really, really high on because it wasn't sexual to be demeaning or provocative. It was just, that was the theme of the storyline. And I thought they played it out very, very well. We talked about that on the on our episode on Monday. One of the big things, though, that I really liked is Storm just won definitively. Monet,
no question,
try to kick out. She wasn't close to the ropes. There was no bullshit. The three Storm Zeros not getting a pinfall. I did really like how Monet didn't like kick out. She barely raised her arm up to get the shoulder up. I thought that was a really, really, really good touch showing I'm almost dead, but you haven't killed me yet. And Monet delivering the kiss backfired on her. But Tony doing it got her the Storm Zero off of the second rope and the win. I thought this match was excellent. I thought it was the right winner because it's tough because I think you could justify Monet winning because she's in a Spell Collector gimmick. She's the only match she's been pinned was against Willow when she broke her ankle when they had to make a pivot on the fly.
Yeah.
But I thought that this was excellent. I do wonder where we go with both women moving forward. I think you could have Tony hold the title for quite a while longer because I don't think she's necessarily done. I wonder if Athena is going to use that for the world title or the TBS. And maybe she sees a weakness in Monet because the chink in that armor is now gone and she doesn't have
They should use it for the world. I think it devalues the gimmick.
I agree, but the both titles have kind of, for a lack of a better term, kind of been established on a similar playing field.
Sure. Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
And we know the history that Athena and Monet have had over the course of the past, I don't know, 3-4 months.
They've been teasing it.
I do think that it's interesting to see where these two women go from here. I think the ultimate end goal is Willow beats Monet and takes that TBS title. I had a feeling that that's where we've been going for quite a while. I think Willow has earned the ability to win the big belt.
Yes.
Because I view the TBS like you do as a lower, but they kind of presented them in the same way. You have Jade Cargill. She's this big star and she holds the TBS. And then sometimes the world title kind of floated around a little bit. Just wasn't super prestigious. You weren't having high end, like quality matches on paper. Now I think with this division, you are in a great spot. Shuri debuted tonight. That rules. I thought she looked really good in the gauntlet.
One of the best workers in the gauntlet for sure. If not the best.
Mm-hmm. Just, you have a multitude of different directions and everything feels wide open right now with these two. And I really, this is for like a better term, this is AEW's WrestleMania. But when you look at how things structure with these titles moving forward, I do find it really interesting that it almost feels like, and the world title too, the men's world title. Once you get to Wednesday's Dynamite, it does feel kind of like a Raw after WrestleMania where everything's reset and now we got to kick some stuff off.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be really cool if they have the residency. So Chicago gets to see everything for the next 3-4 weeks.
Yeah. I think it'll be very interesting to see if they do kick stuff off because, you know, sometimes some flaws with Tony's booking is I think that he always, it seems like almost every week every pay-per-view build kind of keeps fucking that up. He lines everything up perfectly the week before. And then the last Dynamite is just kind of, here's an all-star match. Like, I don't think it was as big of a problem this time as it has been other times, but there was a little bit of it this time. And another thing with Tony Khan is that his post pay-per-view Dynamite sometimes are just like, hey, we had a great show, didn't we? Well, I was sleepy. So I hope you like some good matches that don't necessarily have the strongest direction to them. Gonna go take a nap.
Do we know anything about Jamie Hayter right now and how
uh, I no, I don't think so. Not to my knowledge. That is.
Are we in a position yet where AEW can't trust her anymore?
I wouldn't say that. I think the. I mean, maybe it's just a visa issue, because that's an ongoing issue with wrestling right now. Is
if it's a visa issue, then that is what it is. But if she's injured, we're now at a point where it's getting real close to like Dolph Ziggler kind of territory, where I'm not saying Dolph was treated fairly or his injury stuff was viewed fairly, but from the perspective of, can AEW trust her with the big belt, putting her in big spots?
Question. Well, I don't think she's exactly high up the totem pole for that right now either. I would say Willow's definitely above her, and you could probably say that Statlander, and I think Athena maybe are higher up on that than her too. So I don't think that's really a pressing issue right now. Now, if she was built up as the number one contender, you know, if she was like the hottest non-champion at this point in time, more of a concern. But right now, I think I'd be less put off, just because she hasn't been positioned as like future cornerstone of the division. Jeremy Parente says in comments, got some catching up to do on your review. 2x speed time. I hope you get caught up soon.
Oh, you're funny. I think Drew's comment about Siri and Alex Windsor, who also debuted, getting bigger pops as the fan base sees more of them, because this isn't the super smart fan base that we had 5 years ago. That would have already known who these two were. Yeah, but the second they saw him and go, I'm like, okay, we got something here. And the crowd being receptive to that, I thought was awesome.
Yeah, I will say that Women's Gauntlet, it had some good moments. Not going to bury the match. I mean, I thought it was good overall. I went like 3 on it. But I went 3 on it for a reason, and that reason is it got pretty botchy at points. And I think Tay Conti, maybe we don't feature anymore. Like, that was bad enough. And
why can't she run the ropes, Fred?
Man, why can't she like not kill people? There is at least 2 moves where she dropped someone and looked like right on their dome, and it's like, good lord, this is some ugly stuff. And then Thunder Rosa was not exactly knocking it out of the park either at points.
I think she's cooked, and I think it's injury related.
Yeah, I think it's her back, and I hate to say that, because I mean, she's still in one of the best AEW matches of all time, the Britt Baker one. The lights out, I think it was.
And the cage.
And that was like, and the cage was really good too. But I think that may be it. You know, she may have got like those 3 months under the sun, and then the health issues kicked in, and I hate to say it, but I do think that's the case. But I thought that there's so much bullshit in that match, by the way. Like, so much like perfectly legal Cole stuff.
I was going to say that both matches had a lot of interference.
The women's one had like a whole lot. Too much. To the point that it was like Sky Blue is not an intern in this match, but like, just why isn't she? why don't we make her part of it, you know?
Yeah. I was very annoyed about both matches having that kind of interference, especially after
like it just got out of control. Yeah.
Yeah. Last year's finish in the men's gauntlet was an interference finish, which I absolutely hated, but it also made sense with Christian Cage. Like,
sure,
just stop doing interference in these damn gauntlets. There already is plenty of legal interference with just the competitors in the match. Mm-hmm. You don't need to have outside interference too. Like,
and I thought both gauntlets went too long. I thought both had too many people in them. Like, I think both would have benefited from like, you know, telling a few people like, hey, sorry, enjoy the catering, feel free to make the trip, we'll see you in Chicago. But I mean, it didn't really kill either of them. It didn't kill the show or anything, but I feel like more than most AEW pay-per-views, and there's a couple that exceeded this, but I thought there was a lot of like, we're going to hit 3.5 stars, and like, that's as good as it's going to get until we get to the 3 main events.
Yeah. I will say that I did go 4 on the men's gauntlet. I had a lot of fun with it. I thought a lot of the work was really good. I thought it was structured relatively well, but it also was just annoying enough with some of it where it's just like, eh, I can't go too much higher. But it was fun, and I think that's...
It wasn't bad. Don't get me wrong.
It's mainly what you want with a match. You want fun.
Yeah.
And it was.
As long as you're hitting fun, then you're achieving some level of success, right?
We didn't get any like debuts or surprises in the men's, did we?
I don't think so. Let me double check the notes that I'm cribbing off of. But yeah. I don't recall one, no.
I will say I liked MJF, how he won.
Oh, no, we got surprises. What the hell are we talking about? We got Juice Robinson back, he's shaved and he looks like Bret Hart, which is
rock
weird.
Hard.
He's not very rock hard right now, I'll say that. The Guns came back as well as backup.
The Guns, too.
I thought it was kind of weird to finish that match on the Max Caster enters, and then like 30 seconds later, it felt like, you know, we go right to the finish. That was weird.
That's the gimmick, though. That's why it was perfect. I get being annoyed by it, but that's why it worked.
I just, you know, I maintain my Danhausen idea is still the ultimate idea here, which is Danhausen is announced as an entrant, and then he comes out, does his entrance, and then we get the pinfall before he even like comes down the ramp. That is my stupid fantasy booking comedy idea. That would actually be terrible in practice, probably. I think short of that, so we got an MJF future title match, and we got a my brain is Swiss cheese today. We got the Athena title match coming up. I think definitely the biggest news, outside of like match results and all that, is the Adam Cole situation. So earlier in the day, they announced that they would be stripping him of the title, vacating it. And some people remarked on how this title was getting vacated, while last night the, I forget which women's Ring of Honor championship, but one of them was getting an interim champion.
The women's TV title, which I do think we can declare that I think this makes sense, because
now that we know
Red Velvet's coming back pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Adam Cole may never come back.
Yeah. And that was the big story, is that Adam Cole comes out, and that was weird by itself, because before we knew anything, I was like, well, what injury do you have where you can
my come brain out? Immediately went to neck.
Maybe. Neck, yeah, that's a
neck
possibility.
Is what makes wrestling.
Maybe I thought about concussions, but like I just didn't think that if you were in the throes of like post concussion syndrome, you'd be able to handle going out there. Yeah. And so my mind turned to not injuries, but illness. And that's my biggest concern. I mean, neck would not be good, obviously, but I mean, between a neck injury that ends your career and maybe an illness that threatens your life, I'll take the former.
Yeah.
You know, but again, do not know. I don't know shit. No one tells me anything, and that's okay. I'm dumb as hell. But he came out and cut a, like, before he even really started to talk, he's crying. And it's like, oh, boy, you know, this is not good times. And so he starts talking, and essentially, you know, it makes it very much sound like if he's not retiring, you know, it's you know, right now, it's possible he will in the future. You know, Roderick Strong and Kyle O'Reilly are there at ringside with him. And I hope Adam Cole is healthy, as healthy as possible. I hope he is, you know, not in anything extremely serious. You know by which standard I'm talking about here with the extremely serious. Yeah. You know, this doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things, but it obviously brought the mood of the show down. And the next match, the TNT Championship match, had a really hard time getting back from that. But yeah, I just hope to God that he's okay, because that was, you know, really like very real.
Yeah. From a humor perspective, I wish Adam Cole everything the best. I think whatever he's dealing with, I hope he's able to get fixed quickly and he has a high quality of life for what he wants to do.
Yes.
And from a wrestling perspective, I think it'll be good for Adam Cole to kind of be away for a little while. I think it'll be really good for guys like Roderick Strong, Kyle O'Reilly to be away from Adam Cole for a while. Maybe we can get some freshening up from that perspective.
Yeah.
I think using this as a Gold Watch title reign for Dustin, I thought was a great idea. Well, I was shocked at the finish. He got a nice pop. It was a nice little moment. He's going to lose the title in 2 weeks, and it's not going to be a big deal. And now you can crown Kyle Fletcher on a different stage on something that wasn't just rushed together.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really good idea. I know people were mad about Sammy Guevara. I wasn't. He was going to do some wacky stuff.
I will continue to insist Sammy Guevara is pretty good, actually.
Yeah, and look, let's be real, he looks like a douchebag. Like, he's got that kind of face you just want to punch.
And he's done a couple, like, low-level dumb stuff in the past, enough to get suspended multiple times. Like, nothing that I think he's, like, a monster or whatever, but, like, you know, just a history of some dopey stuff.
At the end of the day, Fred, he was a COVID guy. He stuck around on all those shows. He's going to get a couple extra opportunities. He's going to get a couple extra spots. And that's just something we're going to have to be okay with, because he was one of the few that stuck around, that made sure that this ship did not sink. Yeah. And that means something to Tony Khan.
And I mean, he just now turned 31. So, I mean,
yeah. And you know what? I did love when Dustin got the win, Sammy's face. Like, I don't know if he's turning, but Sammy's not happy. And it took him a minute to go and even shake his hand and embrace him. They planted seeds really nicely there. Doesn't mean anything, will it? We'll find out. And that's a good part about professional wrestling. But I think this is a great way to give a gold watch to somebody who's earned it, somebody who deserves it, and somebody who, by all accounts, is just a good guy to have around.
Yeah. And I kind of push back on calling it a gold watch run, in the sense that I think a better way to classify it would be, we had a change of plans, and rather than going through with the heel title win, we're going to put it on the hometown babyface. And Dustin Rhodes is the perfect guy for that spot. So I don't think it's so much a gold... Like, gold watch to me sounds like, you know, someone that shouldn't hold the title. TNT title is like fourth on the depth chart of men's championships, you know? It's not exactly like we're talking about the world title here. And on top of that, you know, Dustin still can go some. He's a pretty good worker still, considering that he's, you know, been around forever now. I got no issue with him winning it. I think it was smart booking, actually, in the circumstances. It got the crowd back after, I mean, you know, really, you know, everyone in the building was like, oh God, you know, like after the Adam Cole thing, like it really, I think even with the qualms about Cole's work in AEW and everything over the past few years at points, and the awful Bruce Hatches thing and everything, I think that he is genuinely liked enough by the crowd, and especially his coworkers, but I mean, just by the crowd, that he is, you know, he's liked. He is liked a lot. And I think people want him to succeed and be happy and healthy, genuinely as a person, like beyond like any wrestling kayfabe stuff. So,
And I wasn't trying to be insulting with gold watch.
Oh, no. I'm just like, I'm just letting my inner Dave Meltzer out.
That's fair. You're the Kentucky Steamboat. So Tony Khan in the presser, the unified title will have continental rules from now on.
Okay.
From moving forward, there no interference. Trevor Dame, friend of the show, Tony, as a dork in the best way, goes in circles, noting that tonight continental rules were not in effect, which is why he's letting the interference slide. Otherwise, he'd fire Don.
Okay.
Tremendous. Fred, I unfortunately have had some personal stuff come up, so I got to go. But I want to get one thing in before I do.
Go ahead, please do.
My God. Cope has learned nothing. He has learned absolutely nothing being in this company.
Oh, buddy.
And let me tell you what I mean.
Yeah. Sorry, we need to talk about this. we do.
Pyro went off, and you're holding... I can't even remember the name of the fucking... board with the nails, the pyro,
Janice,
and then you stop and you pose. Dude, you're going in there to save somebody. Your music shouldn't even go. You should just run. Oh my gosh, he has learned absolutely nothing. He is a glory hog. It drove me nuts. You have learned nothing, Cope. You have learned nothing. There was so much good about the little things being meaningful and the little things being ironed out with this show, except for that. I did like how Cope is like, go find yourself. Kind of a little melodrama-y, kind of a little like too on the nose, but I did think it worked really well because I didn't see the Nick Wayne turn coming. I thought it was great. But man, Cope, stop inflating your ego, man. You don't need pyro.
I thought... I have mixed feelings on it because his return and the pyro... I mean, the pyro is part of it. He got a big pop coming back, which is the Adam Copeland life story. But I think that... I don't know, man. I'm not that down on it, but I'm not going to say I'm like up on it either. So let's be clear there.
You didn't have any music for Swerve. You didn't have any music for Bryan Danielson. You didn't have any music for Darby. You had a little promo video, but you didn't know he was coming, and he'd come for like another 3-4 minutes, which I thought was a great touch where it wasn't immediate, where it left, like it could have left Moxley's mind that Darby was even coming because, oh, he's not coming. Oh, it's probably just to fuck with me. Okay, I can move forward. And I thought it was great, but Cope just ruined it. He completely ruined it, and it drove me nuts.
I have two tweets to read you before you leave. Neither of them from Trevor Dame, shockingly, but both are somewhat related to WWE. One guy posted about 20 minutes ago, Goldberg coming out with Doug Dillinger, Chuck Zito from Oz, Josh Barnett, Ernest the Cat Miller, and his son Gageberg.
Chuck Zito from Oz? Let's go.
Apparently.
Ah, Chuck Zito rules.
And secondly, Tom Green, who I enjoy, he does all the like WCW jobber stuff on YouTube and that kind of thing, posted about him telling his kid, hey, WWE's on, want to watch that? And his kid saying, you expect me to yeet after I just saw the best match of my life?
Tremendous. Sorry, I can't stay longer, Fred. I'm glad we could get some of the good stuff.
Yeah.
But man, great show. A couple things still need to be ironed out. Like if you're doing a stretcher job for a neck injury, you give them a neck brace.
Yeah, that didn't go great. That wasn't great, but hey, you know. Oh,
also, Trent and Rocky rule for all they handle just stuff. Awesome.
Yes, that was good. That was really good.
Four star match. I loved it. It was great. Just a perfect little pre-show match. Oh, last thing.
Yes.
The Outrunners looking like Newports.
Yes. Hell, oh, that gear was so funny. That gear was great. That match, nowhere near as good as the Collision 101, unfortunately. Like, not the same neighborhood. Still pretty good. But yeah.
I thought if you didn't have the Collision one, I would have been higher on it. But I went 4.25. I still really liked it.
I would not go that high. I went 3.5. I thought it was like, it was a good one. You're like, yeah, that was a pretty nice match, but I sure would not go out of my way to praise it or even necessarily watch it again. All right, Tyler, thank you for popping on. I'm glad we were able to make this work a little bit. I hope you have a great night, and we will be back to record Thursday or Friday. I'll keep yammering a little bit about the show and then wrap it up here.
Looking forward to it. Thank you, everybody.
Take care, buddy.
You too.
All right. just a couple of other notes before I wrap it up here. I really liked that trios match way earlier in the card. You may remember that seemingly happening yesterday, but it was the opener of the actual pay-per-view. And it was the Death Riders plus Gabe Kidd against the Ops. And we got a little lampshading about the Hook situation, but he did not show up. And the Ops won. Then the Death Riders tried to break Samojo's neck. I assume that was an attempt maybe at teasing that Joe would not be showing up at the, in the big main event, infinite running thing. I am now seeing that Saturday night main events, the Goldberg retirement speech was cut off in the middle of it. Absolutely brutal. Somewhere Warren Hayes smiles. Boy, hope you never get anyone that hates you as much as Warren Hayes hates Goldberg. Damn. Anyways, back to the show. I thought this was a really good 4-star match. Great work by everyone involved. Just great action. What you would expect on an undercard of an AEW pay-per-view. Just a really well-worked match. And then we get to the pre-show where I thought it was just... Like, I thought the FTR Outriders match was nice. 3.5 stars. Like, good. You know, very good, but... I mean, the most notable part of it was the Newport's gear. But we do get, basically, between that and the Stokely promo later and then FTR's involvement, we get the tease that they're going to move on to bigger and better things, which appears to be Christian and Edge, or Copeland. Cope is such a stupid name, I refuse to call him that. But those two, possibly with FTR winning the world titles off of Hurt Business. Or Hurt Syndicate. I keep doing the WWE name, the gimmick. My bad. And then the other two pre-show matches. I mean, you know, you had the fun with the Texas team against the Shane Taylor Promotions with the Von Erichs, and then the next generation of Rhodes making a run in. That was fun, but nothing like far from essential. Just a nice little pre-show match. And then you had the return of Big Boom AJ with Big Justice and Cowboy Riz, and Big Justice taking a bump from Trent Beretta, which was fantastic. He teamed with Hologram Kyle O'Reilly and Tomohiro Ishii against the rest of the Callis family in a fun pre-show match. This was definitely was not a pre-show set up to have great matches by any stretch, but... I mean, they made the right call running back Outrunners FTR. That definitely deserved another match before FTR moved on to something. It just wasn't as good as you would have hoped as, after the last one. But, yeah, that's the show. I thought it was a great success. I thought it was not like some other AEW pay-per-views where there's multiple Match of the Year candidates on it. I mean, I thought there were a lot of great matches. Don't get me wrong. But outside of the main event, there's nothing I would really think about voting at year's end. Maybe Omega Okada, depending. I don't think it's going to get a vote from me, though. I could see someone voting for Storm Monet. I mean, that was pretty damn good. But I think if you're watching, like, everything, it probably wouldn't make your top 10. And I think that was the show. So, I mean, definitely newsworthy. Between the in-universe stuff with the results of the top matches and... of course, with Adam Cole's announcement, once again, I'll send my best wishes out to him. I hope he is doing okay and doing as better as possible on the fastest conceivable timeline. I'll put it like that. And I guess that is it for us. So thanks to everybody that popped in to listen. Hopefully we did a suitable job filling in for Joe and Rich while they are watching baseball and eating poutine, respectively. And hope you all enjoyed it. If you are interested in hearing more from me and Tyler, we do ostensibly every week. We do The Good, the Bad, and the Hungy here on this network. It's the AEW-specific podcast. And I also do some extra writing on Patreon. You can find me there at patreon.com/flagrantwrestling. I spent most of last week my wrestling writing time researching the death of Cowboy Bob Ellis. And I have a post outlining all the information I did get and why I was not able to fully confirm it. Basically, it's because no one in Oklahoma will return a damn phone call. But anyways, thank you all for listening. I hope you all enjoyed the show. And yeah, check out our podcast again, The Good, the Bad, and the Hungie. H-U-N-G-E-E, just like the forgotten gimmick from 4 years ago in AEW when I wrote my dopey column. Thank you, everyone. Have a great night. Hope you all enjoyed the show. Take care. Have a great weekend. Bye.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the pro wrestling quiz show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill three contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.